Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, August 7th. I'm Lauren Schmidt, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, arson suspect arrested in Ettersburg. Marshals arrest fugitive wanted for murder and kidnapping in Redway. And Yurok Tribal Police Sergeant arrested on domestic violence charges. Department pledges transparency. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. An alleged arsonist has been arrested in connection with last night's fire in Ettersburg. The Honey Fire was reported around 8:30 p.m. Tuesday evening near Wilder Ridge Road in Ettersburg. Thanks to the quick work by firefighters, the fire only grew to a quarter acre in size and was fully contained by midnight. CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Jeremy Ward confirmed the arrest of Stephanie Harrow on two charges, including arson.
Last night on August 6th, around 8:25 p.m., we received a report of a possible vegetation fire in the Wilder Ridge Road, Ettersburg area. We did dispatch resources from a number of different agencies to investigate. They were able to locate a vegetation fire. The fire was stopped at approximately 0.4 acres. And during the course of that fire and subsequent investigation, a female was located on the property. That female was later arrested for the fire and a separate charge.
Harrow is known to local law enforcement and is a frequent name on the Humboldt County booking log. She now faces charges of arson. Battalion Chief Ward thanked the local emergency agencies that assisted in the response.
Of course, thank the Telegraph Ridge and Bryson volunteers who helped assist and put that fire out. And again, you know, just for everyone, just like we've been talking about, you know, there's a lot of activity going on in the state right now for fires. So we want to try and keep any additional ignitions that are preventable from happening. And along with that, if folks see any suspicious activity related to fires, please report that.
Tanner Spees, the newly promoted chief of Telegraph Ridge Fire, thanked his crew and the residents within his district for their support.
Well, I think this was a great example of the neighborhood really keeping their eyes out. We were hearing a lot of information from many different locations with people who were seeing the column of smoke and kind of helping us triangulate where to get to. This was definitely a neighborhood effort. We want to thank all of the residents in the Ettersburg and Wilder Ridge area. It was because of their help that we were able to get there and find that fire pretty quick and get it wrapped and get it contained. So yeah, I'd say just basically to people, you know, stay vigilant. And when you do smell smoke or you do hear of things, you know, try to figure it out. If you can help identify it or if you can help with access at roads, things like that really help.
Nearly simultaneously to the Honey Fire, the Bear Fire broke out in northern Mendocino on Red Mountain, southeast of Piercy. This incident grew to 5 acres in heavy timber before firefighters stopped its forward progress early Wednesday morning.
My name's Larry Castile. I'm a commissioner with the Piercy Fire Protection District. My wife woke me up about midnight telling me that we had heard on watch duty that there was a fire up at Red Mountain Road. That's not very far away from where we live in Old Piercy. I talked to our assistant fire chief this morning. His name is Delbert Chumley, and he told me about the fire and how many people had showed up. There was the Leggett Valley Fire Department and Piercy Fire Department and CAL FIRE. Apparently, there was a fire burned about 2 acres, and there was a grove down in this area that the buildings caught on fire, and they were able to extinguish it. I think they finally quit about 3:30 this morning. I understand that one firefighter was slightly injured, but from everything I've heard, it worked out pretty good. I don't know how involved CAL FIRE was. I heard that there were 5 CAL FIRE trucks. I believe Leggett was first on the scene, and we showed up shortly after. Piercy Fire Department showed up shortly after.
KMA News reached out to the CAL FIRE Mendocino unit for additional details. However, they have not returned our inquiry as of news time. Over text yesterday evening, Deputy Chief Ryan Smith stated that they believe the fire may have originated inside a greenhouse.
Had something to do with cannabis and their grow shed or their buildings or whatever had caught on fire and burned. But I have no other detail than that.
By midnight, firefighters had stopped the fire's forward progress, at which point it had grown to 5 acres in size. And Castile emphasized that this incident is another reminder of the critical importance of supporting volunteer departments.
I think all the small volunteer fire departments throughout northern Mendocino and southern Humboldt need all the support they can get. We have a small department of 4 volunteers. I think Leggett is probably somewhere between 4 to 6 volunteers. They do their best, the best they can. You know, they all work and they try to respond when they can, and because they care and they try to take care of the community. Donations are always welcome. I'm sure every department would be very happy to receive some support. You know, sometimes support is more than just a check. It's people volunteer to come to help the people at the fire departments clean up their fire stations, to help service their work on their trucks, and just basically be there to support them. Food, when necessary, help, and maybe sometimes a big hug for a job well done.
Local volunteer fire departments are listed on social media, where you can find phone numbers and mailing addresses to share your support. Additionally, Bell Springs Volunteer Fire will be holding a barbecue dinner and concert at Tan Oak Park on August 10th at 4 p.m. Whitethorn Volunteer Fire will be hosting their annual dinner and dance on August 17th at Whitethorn Construction from 3 to 10 p.m. KMA News will share more details on those events later this week. Moss Avenue residents were shocked to learn that the law enforcement activity in their residential neighborhood on August 5th was to capture a Canadian national wanted for a 2023 murder in Florida and a 2022 kidnapping case out of Ontario. KMUD's Lisa Music reports.
On August 5th, a significant law enforcement operation unfolded on Moss Avenue in Redway, led by the U.S. Marshal Service. A single-story residence was surrounded by U.S. Marshals. Humboldt County Sheriff's deputies and California Highway Patrol officers provided backup. Multiple officers, guns drawn, demanded the occupants exit the single-story blue and white home. Three individuals exited the residence and were detained, though only one was arrested. On August 6th, the U.S. Marshal Service confirmed that the operation resulted in the apprehension of Deshaun Thoroughbred Davis, a fugitive who had been added to the U.S. Marshal's 15 Most Wanted list on August 1st. Davis, 36, a Canadian national, is wanted for a brutal murder that occurred on May 7th of 2023 in Miami Beach, Florida. and for a kidnapping in Ontario, Canada, in January 2022. In the Florida incident, Davis allegedly opened fire at a party at the Gallic nightclub, killing Miami rapper Lowell Grissom and injuring two women. The Ontario Provincial Police charged Davis and two others with the abduction of Elnaz Hatimiri, who was taken from a relative's home and has not been found since. In a statement, the U.S. Marshals Service praised the successful capture of Davis, with Director Ron L. Davis stating, "It is our hope that this apprehension brings justice to his victims and safety to the community." The operation was a coordinated effort involving the U.S. Marshals Service's Pacific Southwest Regional Fugitive Task Force, the Northern District of California, and support from the Southern District of Florida. Reporting for KMUN News, I'm Lisa Music.
For the fourth time since the beginning of 2024, Michael Black, 39 years of age from Trinidad, has been booked into the Humboldt County Correctional Facility, this time for allegedly threatening casino staff with a chainsaw. Black has been in and out of the Humboldt County Jail since 2019. Black's criminal history shows a pattern of threats, harassment, and brandishing weapons. On April 9th of this year, Black surrendered to authorities after an armed standoff with law enforcement in Trinidad. That incident took place at a residence on Berry Road, following a report of threats. Black had left the scene by the time deputies arrived, but it was discovered that he had threatened someone with a hatchet. Deputies located Black's truck at his residence. With probable cause to arrest him for criminal threats and other charges, deputies approached Black's residence. Black fled into the woods on a tractor and made suicidal statements, threatening to shoot law enforcement if they did not leave. After barricading himself in his home, he eventually surrendered. Here is audio from that exchange shared by Kim Kemp of Redheaded Black Belt. Be advised that the following audio may not be suitable for all of our listeners. In May and June of this year, Black was arrested again on charges related to being a felon in possession of ammunition and making criminal threats. According to local court blogger John Shiv, Black is scheduled to appear in court in September for all of his prior cases. He was able to make bail on his former incarcerations. Black's recent arrest took place on August 2nd. Deputies were dispatched to the Sherry Heights Casino in Trinidad for the report of a disturbance. Upon arrival, deputies made contact with casino security, who claimed that Michael Black was acting erratically and had made threats to both casino employees and citizens. Black claimed he had a firearm and brandished a chainsaw, as well as a pipe, during the altercation. Black fled the scene before deputies arrived, and on August 3rd, a concerned citizen located Black in the Trinidad area and dialed 911. Deputies subsequently responded and took Black into custody without incident. However, as of news time today, Wednesday, August 7th, Michael Black has once again been released. Last week, the California Highway Patrol arrested a fellow officer, Yurok Tribal Police Department Sergeant Brian Donahue, on three domestic violence charges. The Tribal Police Department is cooperating with the investigating agency and is conducting an internal inquiry into Donahue's alleged conduct. The department has placed Donahue on administrative leave pending the results of the investigation and potential prosecution. In a statement posted to social media, Yurok Tribal Police Chief Greg O'Rourke stated, quote, The criminal justice system was established to ensure due process is applied equally to every individual, including law enforcement officers. The community can expect full transparency from my department throughout this process. We put the community's trust above all." End quote. Donahue was arrested on suspicion of the following charges: inflicting corporal injury on a spouse, assault with a deadly weapon, and battery with serious bodily injury. The Del Norte County District Attorney will decide if Donahue will be formally prosecuted on the aforementioned charges. KMA News reached out to the Yurok Police Chief, who agreed to an interview, hoping it would bolster transparency within the department and serve as a step to regaining the public's trust.
My name is Greg O'Rourke, and I am the Chief of Police for the Yurok Tribal Police Department. I'm also a Yurok Tribal member, and so I have a very unique privilege to be able to be the head law enforcement for my own tribe. I'm very thankful for that. I'm thankful because it puts me in a position to be able to have a positive impact on not just tribal police locally, but even tribal police throughout the state. And so I'm thankful for that.
Chief O'Rourke, there was an extremely unfortunate incident that occurred late last week that resulted in the arrest of one of your own. Can you share an overview of what is currently being released to the public?
So right now, there is a concurrent investigation on domestic violence charges and domestic violence-related charges for one of my sergeants. We're a small department, and it's actually had a real impact, a real gut punch, not to just myself, but the coworkers in the department, and even a ripple effect within the tribe. One of the things that we have done as a tribal police department locally is really embrace and try to demonstrate a trauma-informed policing out with our community. And one of the things that we are hoping that we can learn from this is also looking at our internal wellness and the trauma that police officers, either direct or vicarious trauma, have to deal with. And so when a situation like this does come up within our personal lives, we don't turn to violence and try to look for a different way to resolve an issue, or look to each other for help and support. And so I don't want to abandon the sergeant for this. I think that he still needs support from not just his family, but also his law enforcement family. And I feel strongly about that. I think everybody deserves a path to redemption. However, with that being said, I don't want it to also be mistaken that we support somebody who uses violence against women. That's a stance that the tribe has taken a very strong stance against, to be able to learn from it. One of the things with that, and what we've learned is, part of our historic trauma and part of the intergenerational trauma is that dysfunction that we see within our communities, and domestic violence is that. And so then that's why I bring up a trauma-informed approach, because I think violence can be directly attributed to trauma. So we have to be better at helping each other out and recognizing the trauma and the wellness within law enforcement and the law enforcement family. So that's the goal from this unfortunate incident, that we can try to incorporate into the department to help us be better, not just as cops, but as people.
In the Yurok Tribe's one-year MMIP report, all interviewed participants cited historical trauma and violence as a contributing factor to violence against Indigenous women. And according to the Yurok Tribe's own statistics, Indigenous people experience rates of domestic violence far higher than any other racial group. Data also shows that law enforcement families see higher rates of domestic violence. Are you concerned that these odds are stacked against you? And what methods or techniques are you implementing to combat these statistics?
Well, I think honestly the first thing is just recognition. So when you talk about a prevalence of domestic violence within law enforcement. Sadly, that's true. It's one of the things that we are prone to. But recently, there's an officer wellness movement going on in law enforcement to be able to take care of ourselves because of the trauma that we get exposed to, both direct and vicarious. It sticks with you. And what we're learning about trauma is it's not linear, meaning it's just not a list of things. It stacks, it compounds on you, it weighs on you. And so we have to be able to recognize that and even be open and confront it. I mean, to be blunt, I don't enjoy talking about what happened with my officer, but I have to. We have to recognize that it happened, and we have to be able to try to learn from it. And so recognizing trauma and then being able to strategize ways to be able to cope with the trauma and then offer outlets within not just my department, the profession, for officers to deal with trauma as it occurs, so that way, or immediately after, so that way it doesn't compound on each other. Because before, it was a work culture of suck it up, walk it off, toughen up, cowboy up, whatever vernacular you wanted to use. It was all about not acknowledging it and not dealing with it.
Law enforcement officers are held to a higher standard, sworn to protect and serve. Are you concerned that this could have damaged the public's trust?
You know, as a profession, we have a unique responsibility and a unique contract with the public in which we're sworn to protect and serve. They give us the trust. It's not demanded. They give it to us. And what we're seeing across the country are communities losing trust in their police department. And we're seeing that. So tribal police is even a little bit more intimate because the tribe has a level of ownership in us. They have that belief that they, you know, have that ownership with their police department. And so I don't want the community that we work in, that we live in, that we're a part of, to lose trust in the department. This happened. I'm not going to abandon my officer. We're not going to abandon his partner. We're going to try to learn from this, and we're going to try to be better from this. And we're, you know, still going to respond to the public's need in a positive manner, and do our job in which they expect us to.
And Chief O'Rourke, I want to thank you again for speaking with us at KMUD. What message would you like to leave us with?
I'm going to open up and maybe be a little vulnerable about this. When it comes down to it, we all have emotions, and we're all human beings. Sometimes those emotions can get away from us. What I would put out there for anybody in a situation is when you're feeling that, you know, that that point where you're going to lose control or you're even entertaining violence, that's the time to just leave. Walk out the door, walk around the block, go for a drive, call a buddy, say, come get me, whatever. But, you know, try to just recognize that stuff. I mean, I've had to do that. I'm married. There's times my wife has made me so gosh darn angry, all I could do is just walk out, take a walk down the road, and cool off. But you don't use violence, especially against those that we love. So, like I said, I think that would be my message, and I don't know how profound it is, or I don't even know how wise it is, but it's heartfelt. Just walk away, take that time to cool off, and try to recognize within yourself when you're getting ready to use violence, and know that that's not a good, healthy route.
Again, that was the Yurok Tribal Police Chief Greg O'Rourke, speaking on the recent arrest of his sergeant, who has been charged with 3 counts of domestic violence. As the investigation into Sergeant Donahue's actions continue, the Yurok Tribal Police Department says it remains committed to transparency and accountability. Chief O'Rourke assures the community that maintaining trust and upholding the highest professional standards are top priorities. KMA News will continue to follow this story and provide updates as they become available. The Yurok Tribe is working with the Sovereign Bodies Institute to not only document MMIP cases, but to track domestic violence among its members and offer free holistic services for families and survivors to end the cycle of violence. If you are interested in their support services, you can contact their executive director by email. That's Anita, A-N-N-I-T-A, at sovereign-bodies.org. The National Domestic Violence Hotline is also available 24/7. You can contact them at 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. Or you can text START to 88788. In state news, Bay Area anti-nuclear activists mark Hiroshima anniversary with calls to ban nuclear weapons. KPFA's Yoon Chan reports.
Mei-Ling Hughes is the regional grassroots organizing and policy coordinator for Physicians for Social Responsibility Los Angeles. It is a nonprofit organization that advocates for environmental justice and the abolition of nuclear weapons. She said, although the United Nations adopted the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons in 2017, no nuclear-armed nation, including the U.S., has signed on. She said the treaty would prohibit the U.S. president from having the sole power to launch a nuclear attack, among other things.
No single individual should have the power to initiate a nuclear war. Take the United States nuclear weapons off here. Trigger alert. This would greatly reduce the risk of an accidental or unauthorized launch and cancel the plan to replace the entire United States nuclear arsenal with enhanced weapons.
Hughes said the billions of dollars currently invested in the U.S. nuclear arsenal should be redirected to community needs, such as healthcare, housing, and education. Scott Young is the executive director of Tri-Valley Cares. It is a Livermore-based anti-nuclear organization. He said modernization of nuclear weapons is estimated to cost the country $2 trillion over the next 30 years, and the government continues to neglect employee health issues at the Lawrence Livermore Lab.
Employees have experienced high levels of cancers and other illnesses stemming from toxic and radioactive exposures here. Over 3,000 current and former Livermore Lab employees have applied for federal compensation due to these illnesses.
Yang says environmental contamination is also a concern in the area surrounding the Lawrence Livermore Lab.
Our cancer is just one negative health impact from radiation and toxic chemical exposure. The soils and groundwater aquifer where we're standing and at Site 300, their high explosives testing range, which is out near Tracy, California, are both polluted by nuclear weapons activities, and in fact, both are on the Superfund list of the most contaminated sites in the country.
Yang said Lawrence Livermore is one of the two locations in the U.S. that designs and develops the nation's nuclear weapons stockpile. The rally was followed by a traditional Japanese bomb dance to honor the victims and survivors of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki atomic bombings. Activists also stage an optional nonviolent direct action for those who choose to risk arrest. For KPFA News, I'm Yun Chen.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley. And thanks to our reporters, Lisa Music and Yun Chen. Reporting from our studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.